I did this, I asked ASA to do this symposium in part so I could learn some things from all of the other speakers, and each of them has areas of expertise. Can we get the first talk? The first talk is going to be given by Dr. Martin Luth. In the past, but he didn't inhale. In September 2004, he had a quadruple heart bypass. And in February 2010, he had an urgent angioplasty with two stents placed in his vein graft. But he made some significant changes in his diet, which resulted in some weight loss. And I thought without anything else, I would just let him tell his own story.
How did you lose so much weight? How did you lose so much weight?
The short answer is, the short answer essentially is, a plant-based diet. I went on essentially a plant-based diet. I live on beans, legumes, vegetables, fruits, vegetables. I drink a protein supplement every morning. No dairy. I drink almond dairy. I drink almond milk fruit.
For some reason, that's
reclaimed.
What's that?
His open
problems. What do I have to do?
The short answer is, I went on essentially a plant-based diet. I live on beans, legumes, vegetables, fruit. I drink a protein supplement every morning. No dairy. I drink almond milk mixed in with fruit and a protein powder. So I get the protein for the day when I start the day up. And it changed my whole metabolism, and I lost 24 pounds, and I got back to basically what I weighed in high school. But I did it for a different reason. I mean, I wanted to lose a little weight, but I didn't dream this would happen. I did it because after I had this stent put in, I realized that even though it happens quite often that after you have bypasses, you lose the veins because they're thinner and weaker than arteries, the truth is that they clogged up, which means that the cholesterol was still calling buildup in my vein as part of my bypass. And thank God I could take the stents. I don't want it to happen again. So I did all this research, and I saw that 82% of the people since 1986 who have gone on plant-based, no dairy, no meat of any kind, no chicken, turkey. I eat very little fish. Once in a while I'll have a little fish. Not often. If you can do it, 82% of the people who've done that have begun to heal themselves. Their arterial blockage cleans up. The calcium deposit around their heart breaks up. This movement has been led by a doctor named Caldwell Esselstein at the Cleveland Clinic, Dean Ornish, you know, out in California. The doctors Campbell, father and son, who wrote the China studies, and a handful of others.
Yeah. But we now have 25 writing the book.
And so I thought, well, since I need to lose a little weight for Chelsea's wedding, I'll become part of this experiment. I'll see if I can be one of those that can have a self-clearing mechanism. We'll see.
I hope you're healthy for many years and get to see grandchildren for many years.
Me too. That's really the big deal. You know, Hillary and I, we're happy. We love our son-in-law. We admire him. And we'd like to be around. If there's grandkids, we want to be there to do our part.
President, good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. A random patient, Bill. I'm glad you got to see him. One of those patients, not of Jay's, but I'm sure he just picked him out of a patient list. I happen to have worked with Colin Campbell, who's father and son, who wrote the book on the China study. And I believe Jay's worked with at the Cleveland Clinic and with Esselstein, is that right? With Esselstein, So he has some experience with some of these dietary things, these dietary regimens. I wanted to talk today, as my contribution to the symposium. Jay's asked me to come and talk about meat and the diet and the nutritional aspects of this. Others are going to talk about other parts of this issue of meat, the ethics of meat. But I wanted to talk about how does what we eat contribute to or create chronic disease. I'm going to talk about it in three aspects. In general, how do we create chronic disease? And then how does meat contribute to that? And then is there a diet, a single diet, that addresses all of chronic diseases? And unfortunately, because of the way this room is arranged, I'm going to be doing a lot of running back and forth here. So, new from the USDA, we have a plate now. Any of you may remember, more recently we had a pyramid. Well, now we have a plate, so throw out your pyramids. We had the pyramid with the columns in it. And before that, we had pyramids with levels in it, with grains at the bottom and vegetables and fruits and meats and dairies and the top on it. But now we have a plate. So our plate has fruits and vegetables, the same five things on it. And you'll notice that the vegetables and the grains are a bit bigger, as they should be. And a little dairy on the side there. And we come with a whole bunch of recommendations and tips.
Oh, that's a light. The laser's on the
bottom. Laser on the bottom, okay. A whole bunch of tips on how to meet these recommendations. Two of them here that I think are kind of sum things up that are useful. One is foods that we should be eating more of, and these would be the general recommendations of eat more vegetables, fruits, and whole grains. This is kind of our mantra overall. It encompasses lots of research, lots of recommendations. Eat more vegetables, fruits, and whole grains. Eat less of fats, added sugars, and salts. What we find is that this is what our taste buds really like, fats, sugars, and salts. In fact, the food industry has really kind of discovered this and really incorporated this into all the things that we really love to eat. Don't we all love foods that have fats, sugars, and salts? Almost everything you see on the fast food menus has at least two of these, don't they? You know, the ones I really love are the ones that they've been able to incorporate all three. You think, now what foods could incorporate salts and sugar? Ketchup, yeah. Honey glazed. Your honey glazed chickens, you know, they figured out a way to get all three of those into one food. Pretty good, pretty good. Nutty things, too? Okay. So those are some of our things, some of our current recommendations. But what I thought I'd do is start off with a little show and tell. I do teach introductory nutrition. We do have a little fun with things. And I thought I'd bring my own plate. I was actually a little worried about getting that through security at the airport. Fortunately, they didn't give any problems. I was even a little more worried about some of the things I'm about to show you here. See, we have some foods that we want to show you. I was actually bringing some foods through the airport. Now, what we want to do is create a healthy meal. And what we'll start with is a bean enchilada, okay? That's our protein. Has a little carbohydrate, too. And what we'll make is a good, healthy meal here with some brown rice. Let's see, I got some brown rice here, okay, brown rice, some green beans, and awesome applesauce. So now I've got I can fit them all in one plate here. Now I've got my four, right? Oh, and we've got to have a little dairy, too. A little dairy on the side. Okay, got our healthy meal according to the USDA. Good, good. But of course, we don't eat this way, do we? I mean, in America, especially Americans, you know, U.S. Americans, we don't really eat this way. Let's reverse those recommendations. Let's, fruit, vegetables, we don't need that. Milk, we don't really need this protein. Let's try something else. Let's try a steak. 6-ounce steak. How's that?
Rare.
Rare. Very rare. Very rare. And whole grain rice? Nah. Let's try some mashed potatoes. There we go. So mashed potatoes. Let's get rid of this fruit. Let's try some ice cream. There we go. And let's not do that milk thing. Let's do, there we go. Okay. So for our, a little behind on the lesson here. For our healthy meal, we had 758 kilograms. The salt was actually a little high, and it was probably the recipe I chose. The level you want to get to is about 1,500 milligrams a day, and this is a little higher than you'd really want in one meal. Saturated fat is fairly low at 5.3. That's 6% of calories. You want to stay under 10%, so this is actually pretty good. Fiber is really fine there. You want to aim at about 25 or so. So in one meal, we're getting 16, mostly coming from that whole grain rice and the veggies. So we're actually doing pretty well there. In one meal. We now have our more modern meal, a bit extreme, I'll be free to admit. Sodium, calories is up. Now this is out of about a 2,000 calorie a day diet for a man, 1,500 for a woman. So to have that much in one meal is quite substantial. I'll only mention in passing our obesity epidemic in the U.S. This is kind of where that's coming from. Sodium is quite high. We're now very close to the daily limit in one meal. And now our saturated fat, mostly coming from our rare meat here, is way over the limit at 23%, where we really want to aim towards 10. And here's the most disastrous part in some ways. Our fibers dropped to an abysmal level. And the American diet is extremely low in fiber. We are aiming way below what we should be. When I do surveys of my introductory nutrition students to find out what they're eating, one of the lowest things they ever come in with is fiber, down in this range on a daily basis. So it's really quite amazing how bad we're doing. So let's see if I have any trouble getting these back home through security. We'll see if they stop me with these things. So let's look at this at our healthy diet again. The bean burritos, okay, vegetarian, vegan, nothing, no meat in those, and our veggies, fruits, grains, all of this. Do we really eat this way? I mean, how many of us really eat this way, especially, you know, thinking of Americans? How many of us really eat this way? Who really eats like this? Well, the answer is, actually, a lot of people. We just have to think outside of the U.S. Traditional Mediterraneans eat this way. Lots of pasta, lots of vegetables, fruits, olive oil, of course, good dose of red wine. Their diet is generally low meat, low in meat, and cheese. The rural Chinese, who I studied a lot actually while at Cornell, lots of rice and veggies. Their protein is from very limited pork, eggs, poultry, fish. rural Latin Americans were now down to grain, maize, and potatoes as their starch and beans. And again, very limited meat, cheese. The Okinawans, famous for, of course, their longevity, are eating, again, of course, a lot of rice, green vegetables, fruit, soy, a lot of legumes now, and very limited pork for their protein. Native Americans were the famous three sisters, maize, beans, squash, and a limited amount of game. So what's our theme here, then, is high in fruits, veggies, whole grains, of course, and low in meat and dairy. This, of course, contrasts considerably with Americans as a whole. What are we eating? Well, compared to the rest of the world, we eat a lot of meat. Even compared to our Western European neighbors, we're eating a lot of meat. The reds are, of course, the red meats. We're eating a lot of beef and pork, a little bit of lamb. And we've also, in the last couple decades, started to eat a lot of white meat. So we're about half white meat, half red meat. Believe it or not, according to the USDA, a total of about 232 pounds a year per person across the U.S. That comes out to an average of about 10 ounces per day per person, a substantial amount. Why does this worry us? It worries us because of our mortality rates. Now, these have been changing. These have been coming down, especially heart disease has been decreasing since about the 1970s, which is very nice. Combination of preventive measures, our national cholesterol level actually has been decreasing, and a combination of that and improved treatments. But the blue diseases are our nutrition-related diseases. Heart disease, cancers are the two big killers, stroke. And diabetes. Diabetes and heart disease are the two biggest of the nutrition-related diseases. Interestingly, the red ones are also diet-related if you count alcohol. These are ones that alcohol has a relation to. So the big diseases are, in some ways, diet-related. Let's look at some of the data on these. The NIH AARP study, fairly simple in design. They sent out a question, the AARP sent out a questionnaire to all of its members over 65. Very extensive questionnaire asking what they ate, what they're in the habit of eating. 500,000 sent the questionnaire back. They logged all that data in, and they simply waited to see what all these folks were going to die of. 10 years later, in the mid-2000s, they started getting data back, and they published this study in 2009 on meat consumption and death rates among these elderly. And what they find is that when they break it down by quintiles of meat consumption, that the rates go up. Here they kind of standardize it or lock it in by the lowest level and then see how death rates increase over these quintiles, as they're called. So, for example, this group here had a 5% increased rate of death from cancer compared to this group here. So it goes up by 5%, 13%, 18%, 22%. So what's the difference between this group and this group? It's about the difference of a quarter pounder per day for an adult man eating about a quarter pounder. I did the rough arithmetic here. Between this group, it's a difference of about eating a quarter pounder per day every day over a long period of time. That's how these questionnaires work. So that difference leads to about a 22% increase in death from cancer among these elderly folks. For cardiovascular disease, the increase in death is about a 27% increase in risk. So overall, red meat down here leads to an increased risk of overall mortality of about 31%. Okay, so the take-home message is that among these folks, red meat consumption of an increase of about a quarter pounder a day is leading to about a 31% increase in death. The big D, hey, Let's think about this. Interestingly, white meat, over the same range, and interestingly, they're eating about the same amount, so a quarter pounder of, maybe that's a chicken breast or something, I don't know, over the same period of time, leads to actually a decrease. These numbers are now under one, which means this is an 8% decrease risk, statistically significant, decrease risk of death for white meat consumption. One of the things we have to, I'm now waving my hands as an epidemiologist here. One of the things we have to think about is that this is not just meat consumption, but people who are eating meat in these categories. And let's think of stereotypes for a second between this group and this group. People who are eating meat this much, do you think they are fatter or leaner than people down here? Probably fatter. In the people who are eating more meat. Stereotype, okay? In this group up here, would you think that these are people eating more meat versus less meat? Do you think they're eating more vegetables or less vegetables? Probably less, okay? Do you think they're smoking more up here or less? I'm going to say that they're probably smoking a little more. How about exercise? Do you think they're smoking, have less exercise or more exercise than people who are eating more meat? Probably less. So we're creating a stereotype of a slightly less healthy group up here than at the bottom. So we have to kind of adjust for those, and you can do that statistically, but there's always some question about, you know, are we controlling? I'm waving my hands here. If we're controlling for all those things in this analysis when we're looking at this difference here of 27%. And so we have to be careful of drawing absolute conclusions like if you take out that hamburger a day for the rest of your life, you will lower your risk because there may be other things involved too. But one of the things we can do to try to solidify some of that information and ensure ourselves that we're actually on the right track is to look at other studies. And one of the ways we can do that is here's one of those kind of combination studies. They've looked at a number of studies that looked at meat and heart disease. And they come up with a risk of an increased risk of 27% if you increase your intake by 100 grams, which is about 3.5 ounces of meat a day. So increase by about a quarter pounder, and they say you're going to have an increased risk by 27% across multiple studies. Here's another disease, a specific one now, of colorectal cancer or colon cancer and rectal cancer. These numbers are really small and hard to read. I'll read it for you. They say if you have the risk of colon cancer across all these studies is an increased risk of 25%, and an increased risk of rectal cancer is 31% if you take in, again, about a little less than a quarter pounder of meat per day. So now it's easy to understand that colon cancer is at higher risk because that's where actually the food is contacting us the most. Here's diabetes, yet another quite different disease, and again, quite dietary. That we have an increased risk. Let's see, we want the B group here because we have an increased risk of 20% if we take in about a little over 4 grams now, almost 5 grams of meat a day. So an increase of diabetes, increase of heart disease, increase of colon cancer. I got thinking about, this is all like increase of onset, increase of death, but you know, we'd not only like to live a long time and avoid these big diseases, but wouldn't it be nice to live long and not have disabilities, blindness, things like that, arthritis, things like that, living long and healthy. And so I did research on some of these diseases, and not all of them had had a significant effect, so I wanted to be kind of upfront about this. Meat and hypertension, no real effect that I could find. Atherosclerosis, no real effect that I could find. Limited data, mixed results. Heart failure, very significant effects of the studies I could find. Macular degeneration, this is the blindness that happens in older age, macular degeneration, very significant effects of the literature I could find on macular degeneration. That's what my asterisk means there. Cataracts, red meat increases risk of the studies I could find. Gout, a very strong and clear effect of red meat and gout. Not only is there an epidemiologic understanding of the risk, but we have an understanding of the mechanism. Red meat contains a high level of purines. Purines are known to directly affect gout risk. Osteoarthritis, limited effects, limited data, mixed results. Metabolic syndrome. Metabolic syndrome is a combination of risk factors that basically lead from obesity to a number of these heart disease, diabetes, stroke diseases. And there's a very strong connection between red meat and metabolic syndrome. Obesity, known to increase risk for obesity. That is, if you're eating red meat now, the risk of gaining weight is high. Osteoporosis, interestingly, the risks, at least as far as the literature that I could find, seem to show that the risk runs the other way, that meat consumption may actually prevent bone loss. And finally, Alzheimer's disease, very limited results on that. So of the chronic diseases, debilitating diseases, macular degeneration, gout, metabolic syndrome, where there was clear results, and for others, there was suggestive results. So what do we do about this? Well, the nurses' study gave some very interesting, the nurses' health study, very large epidemiologic study, gave some interesting data, basically showing how you could swap one serving of food for another and get some benefits. Here's some interesting ones here. Let's look at the red meat ones in particular. If I swap a serving of red meat for poultry, basically red meat for white meat, once a day, I can lower my risk by about 20%. That's how you read this. The relative risk goes to 0.8. If I swap a serving of red meat for fish, I can decrease my risk by about 25% for heart disease, this is. If I swap a serving of red meat for a serving of legumes per day, I can decrease my risk by about, 25% there. So they're saying, based on their epidemiologic studies, that swapping red meat for fish, nuts, poultry, fish, nuts, or beans can significantly lower risk for heart disease. Diet groups show a strong gradation. If you go from basically omnivore, eating all kinds of foods, to semi-vegetarian, to people who eat vegetables and only fish, to lacto-ovo-vegetarians, to strict vegans, this study showed a very clear gradation of risk for diabetes. For hypertension, they saw a very strong gradation, very similar gradation for risk of hypertension. So both diabetes and hypertension were greatly benefited by a vegan or near-vegan diet. This is where the famous information on the Mediterranean diet came from. You may have heard or seen news about this, showing that, let's just take this point here. This is basically the risk of death based on your blood cholesterol, or the risk of getting heart disease based on your blood cholesterol level. And not surprisingly, it shows that when blood cholesterol level goes up, risk of heart disease goes up. But the news was that it varies by country. So that all these countries up here, including the United States, had a very high risk of death from blood cholesterol. But here's two countries down here, including Italy and Greece, that even at a high cholesterol level like here, they had lower risks. Why? Probably because their diet were quite different. And this is what the beginning of the mystique, so to speak, of this Mediterranean diet, where if you even at a high cholesterol level, you have a lower risk of heart disease because the diet apparently was so different. And the lowest one down here was Japan. Even at a cholesterol level, which is, this cholesterol level here, interestingly, is 200, which is what the average for the United States is now. Even at that cholesterol level there, their heart disease level was astonishingly lower than it was for the United States up here. So, my final point is that a lot of this data seems to be coming together in a single diet that we've known and has been reinforced by data over the years. And there's many variations of it, there's many versions of it, but it's come together in one version that I'll point out here, which is the DASH diet. The dietary approach is to stopping hypertension. The major article about this came out in the New England Journal of Medicine in the 1990s. The emphasis is on diet, is on hypertension. The interesting thing about it is that it is the original one was not low in sodium. It was very high in potassium and not particularly low in fat. This is 27% of calories. Most Americans eat about 35% of calories. This is actually the toxic level of salt. We tried to aim for about 1,500, but they didn't even worry about that. They just kept it where most Americans eat, which is about 2,300 or 3,000. Their recommendation, though, is a little hard to read over here, so I've simplified it here. They want us to eat 3.5 cups of cooked grains, 2 cups of cooked vegetables, 2 cups of cooked fruit. Let's just stop there. That's a lot of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains right there. Dairy, 2 cups of dairy. The surprising thing to me was how much meat they would allow. I think that they could actually move a lot of that down to the beans section here, and very little sweets here. But that's the recommendation, and you can see how much that correlates with the first slide we showed with the high fruits, vegetables, and whole grains that the USDA was recommending. Again, if you think that that's not possible, think internationally. People are doing that all over the world. So, finally, it takes a journalist to summarize nutrition the best. And this, you may have heard of Michael Pollan, who writes on food very well. His recommendation was to eat food, and I put in whole because that's, if you read the book, this is what he really means. Eat whole foods, not so much. Mostly plants. I'll take questions now, if there's any time at all. How are we doing?
I think I got us behind by doing that. Why don't we, for those who go between sessions and things like that, why don't we go ahead and then maybe we can combine the questions with the next talk. Why don't you set up, Steve, and maybe the one quick question, if anyone had a burning question. Yeah.
The what does?
The DASH diet there that was uh-huh. whole grains and 3 cups of whole grain and stuff. For a diabetic, that's pretty normal.
Diabetes recommendations have been changing. And carbohydrates are not exactly a no-no. They are really moving towards a lot of whole grains, which keep down the glycemic.
They are. Yeah, that adds fiber, of course, mm-hmm. which
Right, yeah.
So, but I thought that was...
And the DASH diet was intended for the whole population.
Right.
Our next speaker is Stephen Hall, who is from Baton Rouge. He teaches in the Ag Center. He's a professor of Ag Engineering, Associate Professor of Ag Engineering, and his area of interest has also been much in terms